Then we're going to have a, we're going to have a thing on another.
Okay. $50,000 in 2 years.
Also, she just wanted to move her own bills around.
They shouldn't be able to give it out to you.
It is cool. Super.
Okay. This meeting of Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. Although it's not obvious right now, a quorum has checked in. And we are going to, I don't think it's going to be a super long committee, and I know half of our committee is on at least one other committee meeting now. We're going to start with Senator Dibble's bill, and then after that, we had Senator Stumpf and Senator Skoy both introduced bills this week that related to ditch legislation in northwestern Minnesota, and we had talked about them. We found out there was some controversy over it, and posting the bill hearing for a day later would not be a very good idea. However, because of confusion that I'll take responsibility for, because we were talking about there's several commissioners from Roseau County and so on who were in town yesterday, and they stayed an extra day for it. So I'm going to have, there's a letter we'll distribute. We'll have a copy of the bill. Senate Counsel is getting a copy of that, just so we can at least hear the issue from their perspective and so on. The issue may still be alive in the House, and if not, we'll probably be addressing it next year. But because they stayed around for it and so on, I think it's appropriate that we give a few minutes for them to express their concerns. We'll have the bill in front of you, but we'll take that up right after Senator Dibble's bill. Then Senator Scalzi has three water bills. We'll get to them. With that, Senator Dibble, Senate File 695.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What Senate File 695 seeks to accomplish is to, for gas utilities, move up their low-income conservation improvement program spending from the present 0.02% of residential gross operating revenue to 0.04%, or excuse me, 0.4%, excuse me. Again, this is just limited to gas utilities, and the truth of the matter is that at present gas utilities well exceed the 0.2%. They spend in the neighborhood of 0.4, 0.8, or 0.9% even. They understand the benefit of these programs, provides a tremendous benefit to their low-income customers. It's oftentimes, not in all cases, but oftentimes a cost-effective expenditure. Certainly there's a tremendous societal benefit. There's also an interest to the utilities, particularly the gas utilities, when folks are having to spend less of their income on their natural gas utilities, they're much more likely to be able to pay their gas utilities. This does not increase low-income SIP spending inside the SIP. However, it does allow them the opportunity to count towards their SIP efforts those activities that are, in fact, cost-effective. Or if they're not, they can exclude those from their SIP portfolio. With that, we have Pam Marshall from the Energy Sense Coalition, who can share more. She's worked very closely with the gas utilities, and we have at least some of my friends here from the gas utilities who can also testify if they so choose or provide information.
Ms. Marshall, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Pam Marshall, I've directed the Energy Sense Coalition for the past 20 years. In addition to regulatory and legislative advocacy efforts, we also administer low-income bill payment and conservation programs. For the past 10 years, we've administered Xcel's combined electric and gas SIP in the East Metro area. And for the last 2 years, we've been working with CenterPoint Energy to design a program devoted exclusively to low-income renter conservation. We support this bill for all the reasons that Senator Dibble indicated. I just wanted to offer a couple of more points. As he indicated, the benefits of these programs go well beyond the obvious energy conservation benefits and energy savings. When we invest modest amounts of money in low-income housing through the conservation programs. We stabilize that housing. We prevent condemnations, forced evictions. We increase the safety and livability of those homes. Again, as Senator Dibble indicated, this bill simply sets the level of low-income gas SIP spending at the level that it's at now for each of the gas utilities and is, in fact, exceeded by some of those gas utilities. And we think it represents an equitable and a modest investment in low-income conservation, and we're asking for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. Questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no problem with the bill. I'm just curious. I always see 0.2, 0.4%, and I'm sort of a total number type of person. So what kind of dollars are we actually talking about?
Mr. Chair, I just asked that question myself, and Ms. Marshall has the numbers. So.
Mr. Chair and Senator, combined, the largest three gas utilities spend $36 million on their overall gas SIP programs. $22 million of that is spent on residential customers, and $5.5 million of that is spent on low-income customers.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anybody who wanted to speak from either utilities or anywhere else who wanted to speak to the bill? I'm seeing some no heads nodding yes. Okay, is there further discussion of the bill? Does this bill go to finance?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay. Further discussion of the bill. If not, Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 695 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevailed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. And Senate Council, you have copies of this.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Sure. This is, we're going to quickly take a look at Senate File 1470, which is authored by Senator Scoy, and he's not here this morning. I mean, he may be in the building. I don't know. We probably should have asked him, but I don't think he is. It just occurred to me that normally we ask the author.
Common courtesy.
And as I told those who were in the room at the time, I apologize because when we... The bill was introduced on the 18th, I guess, and we were discussing yesterday with it, and when we found out that there were some significant concerns about the bill as well, scheduling the bill the night before is problematic when people on both sides don't get to hear about it. And there are several people up here from – they're the ones from, who drive the farthest in Minnesota to get here, and there are several of them who would like to speak to it. So we're distributing Senate File 1470, and there's also a letter from Roseau County that's being distributed as well. And maybe if those of you who wanted to speak to it, you want to come forward, and I know there was somebody from MCA or somebody who wanted to speak with concerns as well, I think. So welcome to the committee. If you can each, please represent Fabian, if others, if you can each introduce yourselves and go ahead.
Thank you very much, Senator Marty. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to the committee. I'm Dan Fabian. I'm the state representative from District 1A. I apologize. I'm dressed like I'm at home. I hadn't really anticipated that this would happen today. Along with me
just
today,
just like a house member.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
They say he's a house member.
Aren't you fortunate? with me today is Todd Miller, who's a Kitson County commissioner recently, Roseau County, and he's also worked extensively with our watershed district up there, and from Marshall County of Scott Peters. He's the auditor treasurer. If I could, just in a little bit of a nutshell, quite honestly, I'm not exactly sure why there's a great deal of controversy surrounding the bill. In essence, what happens is we have a designation of property in seven counties in northwest Minnesota. The properties are called CONCON acres, Consolidated Conservation Acres. And like I said, it involves seven counties. So those seven counties have actually gotten together and have formed a working group, a joint powers group. And this is an issue that's been going on for quite some time. There are two laws on the books that conflict with each other. And I know that Scott here can address those. 104 103A, E, and 84A. And in essence, what happens is, and I want to be clear, when we start talking about ditching, Senator Coonan, I know, is familiar. He's from the ag country. When we talk about ditching and drainage and so forth, I know that that raises a certain level of concern. In this case here, the ditches that we're talking about are all existing ditches. We're not talking about adding anything in. What we're simply talking about is trying to get the state of Minnesota to meet its obligation in terms of paying their ditch tax. Every year, the local ditch authority assesses ditch taxes to all properties. And if I own a piece of property that's 40 acres or whatever it is, I get assessed a certain fee. You may own a piece of property right next to me, and right next to that might be some state land. All of those properties are assessed ditch taxes. Now, the unique thing about these two laws that are conflicting is the fact that you and I, as private property owners, do not get to determine our benefits. That's determined by, you know, the ditch authority. The state, in this case, on these consolidated conservation acres, gets to determine their benefit from the ditch system. So, for example, in Marshall County, they have determined that they have zero benefit from the ditches. So in this past year, they paid zero on their roughly $30,000 ditch assessment. So what happens over a period of years is that this places an artificial inflator on the private property owners, because we still need to maintain the ditches. And maintaining ditches simply means cleaning out the sediment that accumulates in them and those types of things. And what we're asking for in this piece of legislation is to have the state pay their share of the ditch taxes. We had a fiscal note with this bill done in the House, and it came up to about $300,000 spread out over seven counties. So with that, I will turn it over maybe a little bit to Scott. I know that you're on a time crunch here, and I apologize for being I apologize for acting like a senator, being a little long-winded, but hopefully you'll forgive me.
Representative Fabian, I think about half this committee members, one, two, three, four, five, maybe, have been members of the House. So, yeah. Anyway, Senator Brown.
Senator, or Mr. Chair, just in response to that, I just want to say the longer testimony goes on this, the more apt I am to oppose whatever you want.
Mr. Peters, is it?
Yes. I think Mr. Fabian. My name is Scott Peters. I'm the Marshall County Auditor Treasurer. Thank you for having us today, and I appreciate the time you're giving us. I wish this could move forward, but I understand from your end how things are. I think I understand. I'm not used to the process. Mr. Fabian described it right. We have two sets of laws, 103E and 84A. They collide. We have to send tax statements. The state on their side on this CONCON. All state land in the CONCON area does not have to pay their taxes. They're right. They're covered by law. They conflict. Our ditches are failing. We're getting no money in the systems. And the people are suffering. The CONCON was taken over by the state to not inflict hardship on the counties and on the people. But unfortunately, now we're seeing that. These ditches, the people are suffering because of this. We in no way want to have any environmental harm. And we're not asking for anything to do with the environment. We're simply, it's a money issue. To get the same criteria, the state describes benefits, how they're allowed to describe benefits under 84A, is different than all of us, how we're describing benefits. Hydrology on 103E, it's on wildlife enhancement under 84A. So the criteria is different, and it's not right. It's not fair. It's been an ongoing battle since 1984. We've tried to let this work. We as counties feel it's not working. We want to work with the state. We're willing to do anything to make this work. We can't do it without the help of the Senate and the legislature, and we hope that we can get that from you. And if there's – I have a big packet of information if you want a whole bunch of reading, but I don't want to bore your time. But there's an issue. It shouldn't be a controversy. It's not an environmental issue. It's a money issue and a fairness issue. The state – I think as the public, we have a huge appetite. This was described yesterday. I thought it was well said. We have a huge appetite for public ownership of land. We have to also have a public responsibility to maintain what's right on that when it comes to the checkbook. So that's what it's about.
Thank you, Mr. Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing us. I'll be brief, but my name is Todd Miller. I'm a Rosa County Commissioner. I'm here in the capacity of representing the Joint Natural Resource Board, which is the seven counties where these Concon acres are situated. To a more practical point is the DNR by law can determine their own benefits. That's been established. We don't feel it's right, and that's what this legislation is for, is to change that back to having independent viewers under 103E determine the benefits like they were originally determined. We feel that there's a great disparity in what's actually taking place on the ground compared to what their assessments reflect in their unwillingness to pay. From a watershed perspective, and I spent many years on that, and working with the DNR, we've modeled these in Rosa County, the Rosa River watershed. We have an extensive modeling effort and gauging system where we gauge the runoff from these lands and how they do enter and use our existing ditch systems. It's absolutely inaccurate to say that they do not. They need to protect their road infrastructure up in the woods, these Concon acres, for forestry. And wildlife does not want a bunch of water standing on their land for a long duration and a great depth, because it changes the wetland complex that exists there. And so they need the drainage. And the Concon acres, the forestry, half of that stumpage fee comes to the county, and over half of that goes to our school district. So it's important that drainage is there, and it's been established for a long time. It protects the road systems, that kind of thing. So they are using it. To say they're not, it doesn't reflect what's happening on the ground. Okay. To say we're draining wetlands, that kind of thing, the DNR is the one who has been doing drainage projects and conveying water off the landscape, and we have several examples of that. There are several, five at last count, blown out flood control structures that are up in these Concon areas that they refuse to fix and won't let us fix them. That conveys a lot of water down into our illegal drainage systems, and it causes a fair amount of environmental damage. Our fisheries suffer from it, sedimentation, stream bank erosion, channel erosion. The whole water quality issue suffers from this. So from a practical standpoint, the assessments are just wrong, and that's why we're here trying to get a remedy to this through legislation. That's the only practical way we can see to fix it. This year's assessments were $56,000 for Rosa County. I think total arrears are somewhere close to $600,000. And that gets passed on to the private landowner. So it creates a burden for us guys that are trying to farm right on the outlet side of these acres. In Rosa County, a lot of these are at the headwaters, so they get their share of the ditch system, and everybody downstream suffers from it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And we had one person in the audience, I believe, who wanted to speak with concerns about the bill. But as I said, because there's no bill in front of us, this is highly unusual, but I wanted to make sure you had a chance. And if the other individual who had asked to speak is around...
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Sarah Coonan has a quick question first. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fabian, I like the bill. I understand what you're saying, and I agree with all of you have to say. Now, I understand that this affects statewide, it affects just the Concon acres. In other words, I'm worried that some of this is going on down in my area, too.
No, the legislation under 84A covers all land, all state-owned land in the Concon area. Okay. State land is classified differently. There's Concon, state-administered game and fish and such. Any land in the Concon area is what 84A covers, any state-owned land. That's what we're asking to rectify. Oh,
okay, thank you. That's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your indulgence. Thanks.
You guys in my rearview mirror.
and apparently there was somebody here was concerned about it, but not ready to. And again, I apologize to both sides on this.
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Scalzi.
Senator Marty, do we have anyone from the DNR that wants to comment on this?
I don't know if the DNR is here. DNR is not, they don't want to, I don't know. I think not everybody knew it was possibly being considered, so I think people felt they weren't ready for it.
So, Senator Marty, that's my question. In addition to Senator Clunan's comments, I'm thinking, what does this cost around the state? Because it is statewide. Is this a huge difference that would make
it? Concon lands, I think, only.
And that I don't know. What kind of money would we be talking about that the state would be required to pay annually in the future?
I think they said $300,000. But there are other issues. I mean, that's the thing. There are lots of issues here that I don't know that we're going to have a chance to. So this was just make sure that their perspective would be heard in case they were. Mr. Knopf, go ahead.
Chair, Senator Scalzi, I think the witness has already testified to this, too. It does only affect those seven counties. This is only Concon lands. Other state lands are treated differently than this. This statute only applies to those lands that forfeited in the late 20s and early 30s, where the state paid for the acquired the lands, but, so the counties wouldn't go broke, basically.
So, thank you, and thanks for the committee's indulgence on that. Senator Scalzi, you've got three bills. Which one would you like to start with?
Mr. Chair, 757. Well, actually, we could take them in order. We do have an amendment for one. We could take them in order.
We'll take them in order. Yep, 1260. On people's agenda, so. 1260. Senator Scalzi's water day. There's an amendment to the bill, I gather. This being an author's amendment, we will wait till to read everything. Why don't you explain the bill while it's being distributed, and then we'll adopt the author's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, Senate File 1260, relates to some wastewater rules through the PFA and the various state agencies that are represented in the PFA, which is deed and management and budget, health, agriculture, transportation, and PCA. As you recall from the previous bill that we had for PFA, an agency bill, they basically direct grants and loans to small communities that need help that for failing wastewater treatments, et cetera. So what this would do with this amendment, and it would give them a little bit of higher points if you reused your wastewater. So in other words, it would be less of a burden to the whole system if people were to reuse a part of that wastewater. And I think in the future, as we look at the problems we're having with water, this may be beneficial to some of the smaller communities who may be struggling with those systems. But we have with us here Kurt Kudelka from the PCA, and we also have the amendment to put it in the order that we would like.
Senator Scalzi moves to delete everything amendment to put the bill in the shape she'd like. Any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Kudelka, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We've been working with Representative Scalzi on this bill, and we thank her for her time on it. We do support the increased points for reuse of wastewater and other for treatment systems is a good goal, especially in times when we're seeing increased demand on aquifers. Currently, within the priority project listing, there are some points for land discharges for reuse of dollars. What Representative Scalzi's bill does is put those that may use it for some type of cooling system or other type of manufacturing process on the same level playing field so that we encourage additional reuse of these wastewater.
Thank you, Mr. Kudelka. Is there questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. Recognizing, having been in local government, understanding that point, knowing of the point process, understanding might be a broad statement. is there what I'm concerned about is would there be a possibility that some plant that is really has a more serious failing than the plant that's used that is reusing water would lose out in their ranking as a compared to one that's having the reuse of water, but is the failure of a plant going to in most cases outpoint something like this?
Welcome to the committee.
Yes, we have Mr. Jeff. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't Jeff.
Mr. Chair, members, Bill Dunn. I'm the Clean Water Revolving Fund Coordinator for the Pollution Control Agency. Sorry, I was reviewing the amendment here, and I didn't hear your question. No,
well, my concern is, okay, we have two plants that are being given points. One is in exceptionally serious failure mode right here. The other one is not in good shape either, but it is still better than the other one. However, is it the possibility that because this system is going to have a reuse of water that they might all of a sudden wind up ahead of the plant that really is in the most serious need of being updated or replaced?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the way the point system would work is that ideally both would be able to receive funding. If you're describing the one plant that's in dire situation, there should be enough problems there that would rank in the upper third of the priority list. So there is, anytime you move one up, somebody has to drop down.
Right.
But the way that we're envisioning applying these new points would really be focusing in on really worthy, significant reuse of wastewater. So it would be a good project to fund while not upsetting those that are in serious compliance or discharge problems.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Further questions from the committee? If not, Senator Scalzi moves Senate File 1260 as amended, be recommended to pass. This is not a finance issue, I assume, either. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senate File 757.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 757 is a technical correction for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and we have John Jaski here, who's the executive director, and so I'll let him speak to this bill.
Welcome, Mr. Jaski.
Amendment.
And we do have an amendment.
Okay.
And I think you have it in your packet, the A1 amendment to 7. Wait, that's to 726.
726 amendment.
We're talking about 757 right now.
And
I have the same amendment to both bills.
You have the same amendment to both bills. Senator Scalzi, I understand you may be planning to amend this onto the next bill because they're traveling to. Mr. Jaski, go ahead and explain while we hand out the amendment to whoever. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As Senator Scalzi mentioned, this 757 is a bill that makes a very small adjustment to the statute that was passed in 2007. The statute requires Bowser to oversee the operations and evaluate the local governments that are managing water in this state. The statute prescribed that we do that once, at least every 5 years. What has happened is, of course, in 2008, we had a series of budget reductions that occurred, and so this program was not defunded, but the funding for it was dramatically reduced. And so our approach was, instead of trying to do a much thinner version of an oversight program, is to continue to do it comprehensively. And we've accomplished about half of the local governments during this first 5 years. And so what we're seeking here is the authorization to increase that time frame to up to 10 years. And we believe that's important for two reasons. One, we can accommodate the budget that's allowed for this program. And number two, we don't need to actually look at each of them every 5 years. We found that the ones that are performing well don't need that frequency, and those that are not performing as well need more frequency. So we would like to have the flexibility to adapt to the conditions that are presented to us.
Thank you, Mr. Jaski. Questions from the committee? And the amendment, please.
I do have the amendment.
So, Senator Scalzi, did I understand correctly? Did you plan to add this bill to the other bill, or what? I don't know what was discussed. Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be the most straightforward way, but there obviously both bills could go forward independently as well.
Senator Scalzi, you have a preference one way or another?
No, just that the amendment, the A1 amendment, would go to 726, so we would have to amend that onto that bill.
Okay, but there's no amendment to this one. Okay. And you have, Mr. Jaski, does it make sense to then just put it onto the other bill? Is that what your preference is, or?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would make the most sense from a process point of view, and that would be our preference.
Then we will, and is there further discussion on this? Is there anybody who wishes to speak to the bill? If not, we'll lay that over for a minute and then take up Senate File 726.
And this, Mr. Chair, is an agency technical bill that would be possibly become a part of an omnibus bill. And it, this one has, I believe, passed the House. So if we pass this bill, then we would amend the previous bill onto this bill.
And you have the A1 amendment to this.
To 726. Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the A1 amendment.
On that, is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. On 726 as amended, well, we can might as well add on the other one if people want. Senator Scalzi moves that the language in Senate File 757 be.
Yes. A1 amendment.
Oh, that's.
Just lay over that.
Just, in other words, that's the language that I didn't look at. Slightly different. Okay, we don't need to deal with that anymore. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I've not been.
I think we're all a little. You know, we've been here so late at night. I think this is very confusing.
Senator Scalzi, on Senate File 726 as amended.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll walk through Senate File 726 as amended. I will not recap the amendment. That basically accomplishes the description of the bill I previously described with an adjustment to provide some certainty that we don't go longer than 10 years between reviews. To the 726 bill then, Section 1, this provision is modeled after two things, one in Minnesota and one in Wisconsin. The Minnesota model currently has the Board of Water and Soil Resources coordinating a work group that deals with some of the drainage issues. You heard some of the testifiers speak to previously from northwestern Minnesota. Of course, it's a statewide endeavor. This proposal here is looking at using that same approach to take on the issues of water quality practices and project standards. And there's a model that we've looked at in Wisconsin. Ohio also does something similar where they coordinate this so that we get more cost-effective and efficient use of the latest technology in designing and implementing water quality practices. I should make a note that, and I don't know if Mr. Johnson is here from the League, is one of the Minnesota cities. We've been working with him. Oh, he is here. Okay. Welcome, I guess. We've been working with him to make sure that this language works for their from their perspective as well. And so we may at some point want to come back and give you a few more ideas about how that would work if some tweaks are needed. But at this point, the concept is sound. We may look at some detailed adjustments at some point down the road. Section 2, and this, you know, the heading of this section, you know, talks about tax levy authority. These adjustments here are really just technical changes that are necessary based on some legislation that was passed last year to allow local governments to do their water management planning and implementation on a watershed basis across their jurisdictional boundaries, typically for counties and soil and water districts. And so we're simply adding that definition of a comprehensive watershed management plan, which is already in statute, into the provisions that describe how counties, in this case, establish a local levy if they're going to do that to match the state grant dollars. On the top of page 2 or the end of section 2, it does the same language, adding that comprehensive watershed management plan into the list of things that are eligible for this local levy and for the state matching funds that would come with it. Section 3, this is a very technical amendment on line 2.7. When the language was adjusted last year, it was a little bit confusing the way the statute ended up reading, and it would have potentially been interpreted that the state agency, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, would have been establishing the levy rate, and of course that is something that the local authorities do. Our responsibility is to determine an amount that they must generate through either the levy or other sources to get the state grant dollars. And so that's why we're just clarifying that language. On section 3 on line 2.20 through 2.23, there is a currently a fee authorized in the metropolitan area for deed transfers. It's a $5 fee is my recollection, and all this is doing is saying that that amount that is currently authorized to be collected by local jurisdictions can be used as a match for getting a state grant. So it's not changing the amount of the fee or the way the fee is collected. It simply says it's eligible now as a component of a local contribution to get a state grant. And then on to Section 4. This is a section of law that deals with soil and water conservation district practices and projects. This provision in law you're seeing proposed here has been in session law for the last, I think, three biennium. What it does is it allows soil and water conservation districts who get state grant dollars to use those dollars for technical assistance beyond the cap that had previously been in law. And so they can leverage federal dollars principally from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They don't have to do that, but it allows them to do that, to provide that technical assistance and get the federal funding that is often available that doesn't have the technical assistance funding to go with it. And then, Mr. Chairman, members, on page 3, section 5, we're just updating a provision of current statute that deals with soil loss ordinances. This provision has been in law since, I think, about 1980, and the change being sought here would do two things. One, just update the federal agency that provides this technical guidance to base the ordinances on. If that technical guidance is no longer available, the board would authorize another method to be used that would be equivalent. And then the last part of that Section 5 is to make sure that those local ordinances are consistent with these local water plans that have been established in law since the soil loss ordinance statute was created in 1980. With that, Mr. Chair, members, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jaski. Are there questions from members of the committee? Did the cities or anybody else wish to speak to the bill? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Keep it very brief because Mr. Jaski described it correctly. We are working together on this. But just so you know what concern it is that we're looking at, in Section 1 of the bill, starting at the end of line 1.12, there's a phrase that says, and provide recommendations for standardized specifications for water quality and soil conservation protection and improvement practices and projects. Our concern is that if the state agency essentially is making recommendations for specific standards for how projects have to be done, that may be picked up and adopted by watershed districts in an area, and it may be in conflict with what we're required to do under our federal stormwater rules, or it may require resources be used in a way that's not consistent with that. So we're just trying to make sure that there's not an unintended consequence in what we know is a very well-meaning attempt to give us an easier set of guidelines to know what kind of practices work well in which settings.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the committee? Is there anybody else need to speak to the bill? Any further discussion of the bill? If not, Senator Scalzi moves Senate File 726 as amended be recommended pass. And does this go to anywhere else? No. This bill, Senate File 726 as amended be recommended pass. On that motion, any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, I think we've met the second deadline. Senator Dibble.
Now Senator Hoffman can wish us a good break. He's trying to get us out of here early.
I got to go downstairs. I wish you a good break, though, Senator.
Oh, thanks, Senator.
Mr. Ness, did you have something? I'm sorry. Did you want to comment about the thing earlier today? I apologize. We weren't going to bring the bill up, but there were people who stayed here, and I think you may have some. So, Mr. Ness, we gave them the courtesy of listening to them. So if you wanted to comment briefly on Senate File 1470, welcome to the committee, and please identify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lance Ness. I'm the president of Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. I didn't see it on the agenda today, so I didn't rush over here. So, but I understand you heard a bill about the ConCon land issue. I'll try to be brief, Mr. Chairman, but it's a long story. So the ConCon issue goes back nearly 100 years. Up in the northwest portion of the state, they tried to drain wetlands in the turn of the last century. That's the last century, not the one that just turned. So in around the 1920s and 30s, due to the Depression and other factors, the counties basically went broke. The state then assumed all the lands that had been drained as debt collection for the debt that was owed. And over the time period from the 1930s to the 1970s, about two-thirds of all those lands were sold back to private interests. About one-third of those acres, about 100,000 acres, were left in what was called the consolidated conservation areas. Basically, they were in limbo. In late 90s and early 2000s, actually, I think it was 91, former Commissioner Joel Alexander signed a decree making them all wildlife management areas. Upon review, the Attorney General said the legislature must approve that. And in 2000 and 2002, they did approve that, and those lands then became wildlife management areas. We think that's the best use of those lands. Those are wet lands. They're conservation lands, not only for wildlife, but for water storage, for flood storage. This is a tremendous amount of water that can be stored there and stop flooding and help regenerate our groundwater, which is becoming a bigger and bigger issue around here. And so we don't believe the DNR should be held, assessed benefits for drainage issues when they're trying to store water. My perspective is they should be paid to hold that water back. But they shouldn't be part of the drainage system. They're not part of the drainage system. Usually when drainage assessments are made, viewers go out, they assess the property, then they assess benefits, and the benefits are then paid, and the benefits are drained land, not land that is not drained. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll try to be brief here, but we're in opposition to the bill. We think, again, the DNR should be allowed to make the decision of whether or not it should pay drainage fees, and if so, why, and not be forced into paying those issues. And again, this is a long, long-standing issue about drainage and water retention. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my comments.
You were very brief, Mr. Ness, and a good history of it along the way. Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having served as a viewer on drainage projects, were many of these acres that we're talking about under state ownership now, would have they been covered by the original viewer's report in the determination of benefits and damages?
And I'll try to answer as much as I know, Senator Weber. And the answer is yes, but again, some of these benefits were way back done in the 30s and the 40s, and records weren't being kept very well. And so even when they came forward to, do a clean out of the ditches, they ended up doing what was called an improvement. And in fact, reconstructing the ditches, if you can imagine that at the turn of the last century, ditches were probably dug with basically steam engines and horse and plow. And nowadays we have much, more modern ways of draining and fixing ditches. So those ditches became wider and deeper and longer, and that goes into the Red River Basin.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my understanding of drainage law, though, is that in the case of original determination of benefits, that actually repairs, et cetera, are allocated based on that same formula. And then, obviously, at times, if there is an actual improvement and what have you, then there is a redetermination of benefits. But that does always run with the land. I mean, if you buy a piece of land that is served by a ditch, if its original determination of highest and best use provided it to be assessed a benefit, as a property owner, you assume the responsibilities of that. And I'll be honest with you, I think in the interest of being a good neighbor, I think state-owned land needs to adhere to the same principles. But anyway, that's just my general philosophy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Weber, the way the law is currently written for that is that the commissioner does make his own determination about what the value is that for. A lot of those tiles were broken back then, and again, for storage of water, not for drainage. So the benefit, and I believe in benefit law, that they analyze certain wildlife areas and other areas as a different ratio than to improve benefits. So there is a cost involved, but it's not the full cost.
Well, we're not going to get a protracted debate today, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, there was not, Mr. Ness, since the bill was not actually heard today, we just had people here, and because they did, and you obviously.
If I could, one more comment, Mr. Chairman. This was a court case, by the way, involved around this issue, in which another group, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, actually intervened and sued the counties because they had gone beyond and above the drainage. They actually extended drain tile into some areas. They should not have done that. It did not seek a permit, did not seek the proper authority for drainage, and they lost that court case.
I appreciate your coming up here and appreciate the committee. Yes, Senator Scalzi.
And, Mr. Chair, too, I think another thing that we're that is part of this equation is that through the bonding process and with the flood mitigation efforts that we're currently paying for in that area, we're paying a lot of money to create impoundments, which are we're creating wetlands because somebody filled in the wetlands in the past. So we're spending a lot of money in that effort. I mean, millions every year in flood mitigation efforts, and a lot of it is going for either buying up properties that were built in the floodplain or creating impoundments to hold the water. And if we've got a way to hold water on state land, that's what our ultimate goal should be, I would think, rather than ditching it. So that's where you have the you have to balance what's the benefit. Is it a benefit to hold water to protect other properties, or is it a benefit to ditch the water off as fast as possibly? This is a real issue in the future.
With that, thank you all for...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
And as I mentioned, we finished the committee's agenda for the first two deadlines, and with that, this meeting is adjourned.